All right, strap in, everyone. We're going deep into Genesis this time, chapters 5 and 6 specifically. You know, the ones you flagged for us. Genealogies and the sons of God. A world on the brink. It's a lot to unpack.
You really picked some dense chapters.
Yeah.
I mean, genealogies, mysterious figures, a whole world headed for destruction. It's going to be a wild ride.
Okay, so let's start with these genealogies. Honestly, sometimes I just kind of skim over those, but I'm always up for being surprised.
Well, these chapters are fascinating. They set the stage for the flood, you know, a time when wickedness was just everywhere. You're basically looking back into the ancient world right before everything changed.
It's like the world was about to hit the reset button. So how do these genealogies, you know, all these so-and-so begat so-and-so, how do those help us understand what's going on?
Most people skip over them. But they're actually crucial. You can't see the bigger picture without them. Look at chapter 5, the genealogy of Seth. That gives us a direct line to Noah. You know, the guy is going to be super important in God's plan. And then compare that to the genealogy of Cain back in chapter 4. Totally different.
It's like one branch of the family tree just like stops. And then Seth's line keeps growing.
Yeah. The genealogy of Cain ends abruptly, almost like a dead end. But Seth's genealogy, that one keeps going. It leads us to the righteous line that's going to repopulate the earth after the flood.
It's more than just names and dates, though, right? There's this whole thing with the lifespans. They start out crazy long, and then they just get shorter.
That's a good point. It's subtle, but it's like a constant reminder running through the text, the consequences of sin. Like our choices, even the small ones, they can affect everything. Our lives, the world around us, it's a ripple effect.
Wow, that got serious fast. So more sin equals shorter lives. But then there's this guy, Enoch. He's totally different. Walked with God and then boom, was no more because God took him away. What did he, like, skip death?
Yeah, Enoch's translation is wild. It's like the opposite of all the death we see in the genealogies. It gives us hope. Death isn't the end for everyone, not for those who are faithful to God.
And speaking of people who stand out in those genealogies, what about Noah's dad, Lamech? He says this weird prophecy about his son. Noah will bring comfort from the toil and the curse on the ground. But comfort, that usually means like physical stuff, right? How can Noah offer comfort when the world is drowning in wickedness?
Lamech's prophecy is super interesting. It's not just about physical comfort, like making farming easier. It's about something deeper. Noah brings a different kind of comfort, relief. Like a break from all the evil that was taking over the world.
So Noah isn't just some farmer. He's this pivotal figure. He's going to be the new starting point for humanity once God washes everything clean.
Okay, but before we get to the flood, we got to talk about that passage. The one with the sons of God and the daughters of men. You know, the one that makes all the Bible scholars go crazy.
Let's be careful here. The traditional view is that the sons of God are fallen angels. They intermarried with humans.
Like there's a rebellion in heaven and it spills over to earth. That's intense. It is dramatic, right? And that interpretation has been around forever. But there's another view. The sons of God could be descendants of Seth, the righteous line. And they intermarried with the daughters of men who might be from the line of Cain.
So no angels versus humans. It's more like two groups of humans, the good guys and the bad guys.
Yeah. And no matter how you interpret it, it's about crossing boundaries.
Right.
Whether those are the lines between the spiritual and physical worlds or the lines between good and evil.
Okay. And then there's the Nephilim. Those mysterious kids. Were they actually giants? Come on, I want giant battles.
Well, the text doesn't say giants outright. It uses the word Nephilim, which is also in Numbers 13, where it does mean giants. But here in Genesis, it could just be powerful warriors. Like, they were really strong and violent. They were scary.
So imagine them like superheroes, but like the bad kind. Super powerful, super influential, but nobody really knows who they are.
Exactly. And it's like they just add to all the violence and lawlessness that's all over the world.
It's like the world was falling apart. And then you get to Genesis 6.58. The Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on the earth. The Lord regretted that he had made human beings on the earth, and his heart was deeply troubled. Wow. God is, like, heartbroken.
Yeah, this is heavy stuff. This isn't some distant God. He's not ignoring what's happening. God is invested in humanity. He cares about us, about what we do, about the consequences. This is real sorrow. Divine lament. The world was consumed by darkness.
It makes you think about the choices we make today. Like, what are we doing that's making the world a better or worse place?
We have to understand, God's regret isn't about creation itself. It's about what sin has done to the world.
And the flood is this drastic judgment, but it's also mercy in a way. It's hitting the reset button on a world that's gone way off course.
Yeah, it's going all the way back to the beginning, like Genesis 1.2.
And in all this destruction, there's still hope. Noah and his family.
Noah's the one good guy left. He stands out in all that wickedness, Genesis 6.8. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord.
So after all the chaos, God's promise to Noah shows us something. About his character, about his hopes for what humanity can be, what happens next.
Noah and his family, they're going to be the ones to start over after the flood. And it's not over. God's plan doesn't stop there. He makes a covenant with Noah. He promises never to destroy the world with a flood ever again.
That's a big promise. After living through that, I bet Noah and his family were pretty relieved.
I'm sure they were. And that promise, that's symbolized by the rainbow. God puts it in the sky as a sign of his covenant.
Such a beautiful image. Hope. A fresh start after the storm.
It is. And it reminds us that even when things are bad, God is always with us. His mercy and faithfulness never go away.
So this covenant isn't just some old agreement, right? It's the foundation for how we understand God, his character, his relationship with us. It's still relevant today.
Absolutely. It sets up these timeless principles, the sanctity of human life, justice, and God keeping his promises. He's always faithful.
It's amazing how these old stories still matter. They teach us about being human. About God's nature and this whole idea of redemption.
And they make us think about our own lives, the choices we make. We're supposed to reflect God's image, even though we live in a world that's still messed up from sin.
Okay, so we've got this picture now, a totally wrecked world. And Noah and his family, they're the only ones left, starting over. And then God makes this covenant, this promise with Noah, sealed with a rainbow. That's going to be significant, right? What does that covenant tell us? About God, about humanity, about what's supposed to happen next.
Yeah, the Noahic covenant, that's what it's called. It's huge. Things are going to be different now. How God relates to humanity, it all changes. We got to look at Genesis 9 to really get it.
All right, let's dig into it. What are the big things in this covenant?
Well, the first thing is God says he's still blessing humanity. Remember, way back in Genesis 1, God blessed Adam and Eve, told them to rule over the earth. Well, in Genesis 9, he says the same thing to Noah. That blessing is for his descendants too.
So even after wiping out, like, everything, God's plan for humans is still the same. He still wants us to flourish and take care of creation.
Exactly. But there's a twist this time. God says it's okay to eat meat now. Before the flood, they were basically vegetarians. But now, Noah and everyone after him, they can eat animals.
Whoa, hold on. Really? I never noticed that before. What's up the sudden menu change? Was post-flood barbecue just too tempting?
Uh-huh. I don't know about that. There are a lot of different ways to interpret it, but one idea is that it shows how things have changed between humans and animals. Like the world before the flood, it was so violent. So maybe now humans need to be more dominant over the animals, just to survive.
Kind of a dark side to man's best friend, huh?
It's a reminder. Even though God showed mercy, even though he's given us this new start, sin is still a problem. And that leads us to another part of the covenant that's always kind of bothered me. Capital punishment.
Wait. Capital punishment, that's in God's covenant with Noah. That seems pretty hardcore.
Yeah, it does. But you got to look at the whole picture. Genesis 9.6 says, whoever sheds human blood, by humans shall their blood be shed. For in the image of God has God made humankind.
So taking a human life is a big deal because it's like you're attacking God's image, right? Since we're all made in his image.
Exactly. The point of capital punishment back then was to protect human life. To make it clear that killing is wrong. Sin messed up human nature. So you need rules, consequences to keep evil in check.
It's like a safety net to protect people, keep things in order, especially after everything that happened.
Right. But it's important to remember, the covenant isn't just about laws and punishment. It's about God's promise. He'll never flood the earth again.
Can you imagine what a relief that must have been for Noah? I mean, I'd be traumatized.
Totally. And that promise is symbolized by the rainbow. It's God's reminder in the sky. Don't worry, this won't happen again.
That's beautiful. Hope and a new beginning.
It is. And it reminds us, even when God has to judge, he's still merciful. He's still faithful.
So this Noahic covenant, it's not just ancient history. It tells us something about God and humans, something that's still true today.
Definitely. It lays the foundation for how we should live. Human life is sacred. Justice is important. And God always keeps his promises.
It's amazing. These stories from so long ago, they still matter today. They help us understand what it means to be human. And they show us God's nature. This whole story of redemption, it's still going on.
And they challenge us, too, to think about how our actions affect the world. We have to remember we're supposed to reflect God's image, even though we live in a broken world. It's not easy.
Man, this deep dive into Genesis chapters 5 and 6, it's been a lot. We started with those genealogies, and I'll be honest, I used to think they were just like boring lists, but you've shown me there's so much more there.
It's true. Genealogies, they're not just about who came from whom. They're about God's plan for humanity. His faithfulness, the consequences of sin, it all starts there.
And then that story, the sons of God and daughters of men, so mysterious. We talked about different ways to interpret it, but I keep thinking about those boundaries, the ones that got crossed, and the mess it all created.
Boundaries are important. That's a big takeaway. Not just for us personally, but for our relationship with God, with each other. When we cross those lines, things go wrong.
And we see that leading up to the flood. So much violence, so much wickedness. Like the world was completely out of control. It's scary to think what happens when people turn away from God.
But even when God judges, you see his mercy. He chooses Noah, a good man, to save a little piece of humanity. And he makes that covenant, that promise, to never flood the world again.
That rainbow, such a powerful image. Hope, a new beginning.
It is. And it reminds us that no matter how bad things get, God keeps his promises.
And that's something we can hold on to, right? Even today, maybe we don't have a literal flood to worry about, but there's still sin, still consequences. But God's still with us. He gives us grace, mercy, and hope.
Yeah, even a new beginning.
You know, what really gets to me is that passage where God is grieving over what humanity has become. It's so powerful, so emotional. God is invested in us. He cares about our choices, about what we do, and he wants us to come back to him.
It makes you think, doesn't it, about our actions. Do they make God happy or do they cause him pain? But we also have to remember, his love is always there, even when we mess up.
This deep dive has given me a lot to think about. Those genealogies, they're not so boring anymore. And those boundaries, man, we got to figure those out. The ones in our own lives and our relationship with God and everyone else.
It's been great exploring these stories with you, and I hope you keep digging into Genesis on your own.
Yeah.
It's full of wisdom. You can learn so much from it.
This has been an amazing journey. We've gone deep into some really important parts of the Bible. I feel like I understand things in a new way now. Thanks for coming along with us on this deep dive. We hope you enjoyed it. And until next time, keep searching, keep asking questions, and keep diving deep.